Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia?
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger, David Burns, and the Rivertown Kids on the Grammy Award-winning album Tomorrow's Children. Another hour coming up here of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. Glad to have you with us. I'm Harvey Washman, and author of Solartopia, and enjoying being on PRN-FM, as always. We have a wonderful guest today, another Harvey. We will indulge later in the show in a discussion of this name, Harvey, but we're going to start off with Harvey Arden here. Harvey, you with us?
I'm with you.
Good, good. You are a great man. It's really an honor to have you on the show. You are one of the truly great chroniclers, non-Indian, non-Native American chroniclers of the Native American culture.
So it's turned out of the philosophical culture, not of the anthropological.
Okay, well, we can
discuss that. An anthro I'm not.
So. Okay, well, I want to get into that kind of thing a little later in the show. I want to start off the hour discussing a topic and a man that are of huge importance, I think, to our society, Leonard Peltier. Leonard Peltier is a Native American activist from the American Indian Movement. He's been held in prison since 1977, for God's sakes, 36 years now.
38.
However long it is, he's been in jail significantly longer than was Nelson Mandela. He was tried and convicted for a double murder of two FBI agents that occurred at the 1973 uprising at Wounded Knee, South Dakota. And Harvey, you know a lot more about Leonard Peltier than I do and most people. So give us, please, a rundown of the case and how he wound up in federal prison.
Well, I have studied this for 30 years now, reading everything I can get on it. I've met Leonard himself 6 times and when he was in Leavenworth, and I was able to visit him, not since. He's an innocent man. Whatever else you may say about Leonard, he didn't do the killings that he's alleged to have done and is in prison for having done. And what can you say? They needed an Indian, and an innocent Indian is even better than a guilty one. I mean, guilty people lie and so forth, but the innocent, all you can say is, you know, it's like, what if they said you killed somebody? I didn't do it. That's all an innocent person can say. They don't know anything about it.
Well, give us a Harvey Arden, if you would, tell us the and you have a book about Leonard Peltier, is that correct?
I worked with him on a book. It was published in 99, Prison Writings, My Life is My Sundance, and it later turned into a play, very successful, briefly, in Boulder, Colorado in 2008. Still hoping somebody will want to put this play on. And,
okay, so tell us the circumstances of the case. Tell us, if you would, please, what happened at Wounded Knee in 1973, how these two FBI agents were killed, and FBI agents were killed, and how did Leonard Peltier get ensnared in this capital case?
Well, that's a good question. A whole group of, well, what happened was that on the alleged excuse of looking for a pair of stolen cowboy boots, the FBI, which has jurisdiction on Indian reservations, the FBI came to search what a known camp of AIM activists who had come to try and stop some of the killings that were going on. This is what's known in Indian country as the Reign of Terror back in the early 70s. Not that it hasn't continued. Leonard was, it's often confused that Leonard was at the 1973 Wounded Knee conflict. He was not. His arrest was 2-3 years later, and 75 was when the incident, the so-called Oglala firefight, is what wound Leonard up ultimately in jail.
And there was Robert Redford made a documentary film called Incident at Oglala.
Indeed he did, and it was a great film he was to have done at some point for years. I think he was even under contract to do a movie on Leonard, but it never came about.
So what did happen then at Oglala in 1975? What was the circumstances of this? Of this killing.
All right. He was, I've just been there not too long ago at the site of all of this. A few buildings, often a very otherwise largely desolate place, I would say. And Leonard was there at the request of the Jumping Bull family, who were under protest. There was a group run by the tribal councilman known as the Goons, the Guardians of the Oglala Nation, and they were creating terror everywhere among traditionals. And AIM, the American Indian Movement, was there to protect the traditionals. And so there was an encampment right around the Jumping Bull's home there. I don't know how many Indians were there. Maybe, you know, there were a few women, and they were cooking pancakes, and Leonard was, yawning in his tent, and all of a sudden they started hearing the shots. And everybody thought, well, first somebody's hunting, but no, wait a second, there's shots here, shots there, shots coming from everywhere, and all of a sudden they realized they were in the middle of a war scene. They had no idea who was shooting what at whom. They had a few rifles and guns, and they, like Leonard said, he shot some shots off just so the people who were shooting at them would know that there was some defense there.
And this is exactly where? This is on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota?
This is on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota on, I think it was July 26, 1975, or 76. And I'm getting to be an old guy now, and the dates start to conflate with each other. But the important thing is that Leonard's innocence was apparent. He wasn't there. He didn't see it. He didn't see it happen. Not that they didn't produce witnesses who said just the opposite of each of those things in the trials. The whole thing, it's a world of shadows and shadows within shadows. Like he says, I'm one of those shadows myself. I, Leonard Peltier.
And this and is,
go ahead.
Yes, please. So Leonard Peltier, he was a founding member of the American Indian Movement. Is that correct?
I don't know. One of the early members. I don't know that he founded it. He was a guy. He was not even a big leader in AIM, as a matter of fact. He was one of, you know, it's a group of a few dozen guys. Dennis Banks, Clyde Belcourt and Vern, and a few others. It grew out of a jail. They were all in jail together, and they got this idea, God damn it, look what they're doing to Indians. I mean, it was horrendous, you know. The whole Indian service was there to exploit the Indians and reduce them as much as possible, which they certainly did. and destroy the culture, the religion, whole idea of sacredness that's so important to Indian people. White man couldn't have cared less about sacredness. That's just their weakness is sacredness. So they shot and killed all their elders. There are all sorts of histories in the United States since the D. Browns in the 60s. What was it? Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee.
Right.
I remember reading that way back then. I had no notion of Indians, and I was starting to work at Geographic as an article writer.
Well, you have Harvey, you have a really fascinating personal history that I want to get into in terms of your relations with the Native Americans. Let's focus, let's make sure we get out what we need to talk about here about Leonard Peltier. So Leonard Peltier was a member of the American Indian Movement. He was encamped with a family that had asked for protection on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
Right.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, the family, actually the Jumping Bulls were down in Nebraska that day at a steer auction. So they
uh-huh.
weren't there. And
They weren't even there.
They weren't even there, Harry and Mrs.
So the FBI came storming in. And they were looking for guys.
Well, the whole army of people came storming in, and, you know, including military vehicles, and there's much argument over how preset all the government positions were. They're having 2 hours before, 3 hours. It's a world of shadows, you know. You can look down one avenue and say, oh, that's how it all happened. Look down another avenue, that's how it all happened.
Well, it happened
and they're
a
totally
long time
opposite.
Ago.
Pardon me?
It happened a long, long time ago already. So somehow, two FBI agents, and I, of course, I've seen this incident at Old Law. I've read Peter Matheson's amazing book,
yes,
In the Spirit
it is
of Crazy Horse.
Absolute masterpiece.
Huge, huge book. I mean, a tremendous amount of research.
Oh, yeah, 600 pages, yeah.
Right.
Small
and
print.
Peter Matheson, of course, is a truly great writer, very well respected. Peter Matheson, actually, I think, is one of the greatest nature writers I've ever read. I mean, his descriptions of our Mother Earth and all her beings are matchless.
Yeah, a fabulous writer, so, unquestionably.
And I have met Peter Matheson, and so he's devoted the entire book to this.
And often he appears on various forums and things about Leonard. I've been on stage with Peter a couple of times.
Yes.
And a good, good, good human being, that's for sure. And a hell of a writer.
So the sum total of the incident, as best we can tell, is you have stated, and it's almost surreal to hear this truth, but these two FBI agents were looking for a guy, an Indian, a Native American, who is suspected of stealing a pair of cowboy boots.
It's all garbage, as they say. It was a made-up thing. And maybe some guy did steal a pair. Actually, he was later exonerated entirely. I think he probably was working with the feds. You can't tell in this world of Peltier who is who ever. The people very closest to, like Dennis Banks had this closest guy, and it was revealed publicly that he was an FBI operative. And later passed away a few years ago, but lived on.
Dennis Banks?
No, yeah, Dennis Banks. I wish I could remember. I can't remember the guy's name who was openly, he admitted it, that he was an FBI, and he was like Dennis's right-hand man at that time. Dennis, a great man. Listen, great men have strange people come to them, I'm sure. How do you know? And again, it's the world of shadows. Is this guy for real? Is this guy, the one lady they threatened to cut off her hands, like they'd done to Anna May before that, and she told a whole series of lies that got Leonard extradited from Canada. And then they didn't even use her in the trial because she was mentally challenged, for sure. And terrified. The use of intimidation of witnesses, suborning of witnesses, is routine. invention of evidence. This bullet wasn't that gun when neither bullet nor gun had anything to do with anything. And there's no challenge to it. There's no oversight over it. Nobody can point to the FBI and say, my God, how can you do this time after time after time? This was one of their, you know, it's all in the service, really, of the energy industry, whatever that means, all versions of energy, I suppose. There was a uranium plot there on Pine Ridge, and they got it. They did get it. So,
what did they get on Pine Ridge?
The rights to exploit the uranium that lay in the ground there. That was apparently the reason for just about everything that happened to Leonard and those people at that time. While the fight was going on at Oglala, the head of the reservation council was in Washington signing away the rights to dig in this whole uranium thing. It was to be a sacrificial area, a nice phrase the government invented.
This incident at Oglala was essentially created by the FBI to give them
almost certainly. They had handbooks ahead of time about how they were going to do it all. I mean, it's all been revealed since, but no amount of revelation or truth is going to dislodge the government's position that, you know, Leonard Peltier is this crazy mad dog, which of course he is not. He's hard not to like him if you meet the guy. He's even jovial in the midst of all that, cracking jokes. And a man who has become a symbol, I can't imagine if I were some big symbol like that, what the burden of that, you know, it's like being a Snowden or
Bradley Manning.
Yeah, Bradley Manning. So, but even bigger in his own way, you know, although now people are forgetting, you know, they've won. Leonard is 68. He went in when he was 31. I mean, even if he got out tomorrow, what has he got left? He's not
well,
in
you
good
got time
health.
Left. We're talking about Harvey.
Well, he would. He wants a herd of buffalo somewhere up in Saskatchewan. Would make him happy. He's not going to lead any rebellions at his age, I don't think.
We're talking with Harvey Arden, the author of numerous books, and especially about Leonard Peltier. Now, let's get to the bottom of this. So the FBI created an incident, sent in basically an army to wipe out this encampment.
They wanted to get this uranium, and they created incidents. They have, police jurisdiction over federal reservations, and as I say, there were some cowboy boots, and they came storming onto the thing, wound up at this Jumping Bulls camp. Firefight ensued. At the end of that firefight, two of their agents and one Indian man, Joe Kilsright Sons, was killed. And Leonard and a few others helped lead the people through a gully out and under an underpass under a road. And they actually got away from this surrounding group of hundreds of what he describes as crazed lawmen. There were planes flying. I mean, this is a big setup. There's no question of that. And Leonard somehow got away, and so did all the other principals. And then they started being caught afterwards in strange, one there was a car explosion in which different guns were found, and two of the guys were captured, Robidoux and Butler. And it gets, frankly, to me, it's a dull story at this time. I've thought of it 20,000 times. It's like Leonard, every time he gets in a court, they hold up the pictures of the dead agents and said, did you see the dead agents? He says, well, shit, I've seen that picture 10,000 times. And then they take that for having meant that he saw the agent. He didn't see the agents get killed. It's a mystery. To this day, I don't know who killed him. There's some people who are suspect. In my mind, I wouldn't even mention them. And if they're Indians, you never know with an Indian person if the FBI doesn't have their thumb on his chest in some rotten way that make him do something he just would never do on his own. And then everybody hates him. It's an old trick, you know, dividing everything. No more divided people than Indians. My God, it's nothing but factions when you go on a res. Make one friend and you got six enemies. It's a very tough world in every way. I'm sure the FBI's don't know how to handle it. And they just impose their own agenda there, which is the agenda of the energy companies. And all this comes back to them, don't they? It's the same. Yeah, I mean, it's the same now 40 years later. Who's screwing the world? The energy companies or the banks, but they're all intermixed. They're not really separate. And Leonard is one of the, you know, like, I hate to call him a canary in a cage. He says, don't call me a canary, Harvey, which is true. He never would. Tell anybody. He doesn't need to. He's one of those unfortunate innocents. You, what can you say? You know? Hey, Harvey Wasserman, you killed XYZ. And they come up with pictures and bullet holes, guns that are invented. They withhold their own forensic evidence that would have freed Leonard at the very beginning. You know, they had moles in his team. I wish that mole would reveal himself sometime. And such dirty business. It's just, when I first got into it, I was almost too disgusted. You know, oh my God, killed two injured FBI agents with a high-powered rifle. He never had a high-powered rifle. Where the hell would he have that? And they had all the high-powered rifles. The deaths of their own agents, they're as much suspect for having caused them, if not actually done them for some god-awful reason. Who knows? It really, a lot of people need to come forward. This is, you know, again, this is 40 years ago now. It's time to let the world know what really happened. Even then, we won't believe it, because it is, again, all shadows, lies, deception, disinformation, all over the place. You don't know when you read something, say, oh, that explains that, that you've just been disinformed about something. There's no way to tell.
Well, Harvey, how do we get Leonard Peltier out? What should people do now to try and get Leonard Peltier free? My understanding, he has grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Oh, yeah, yeah, ones he's never seen. I've met a few of his kids, wonderful kids, Cyrus and Alex, and there are others, and none of them doing very well, you know. I don't know, millions of dollars have been collected on Leonard's behalf in the last, just in the 20 years I've been involved. What can I say? Only $500, so they create this committee, but then what does the committee do? I mean, who is the committee? I've been through 7 or 8 or 9 committees in the 20 years. So, and they're all tampered with, or might be. You just don't know with anybody. You know, I've seen interviews on television. They're obviously trying to gut him, you know. And then the, interviewers get, who screw him, like the guy who asked, did you see these Indians? And shows him the picture that Leonard had seen, that they've been showing him this picture for 30 years. He didn't know what to answer. Have you seen it? Yes, I've seen it. But no, I wasn't there. Oh, well, that doesn't count. You know, it's the judicial system when your judges, when they're frightening the jury out of their minds that the AIM is going to attack, which, of course, it never did. They act like there was some hunting season on FBI agents, but if you examine the numbers on Pine Ridge in those years, 2 FBI agents were shot to death. around 300 Indians were shot to death and more than that injured. And, I mean, they stopped counting. Those events were never investigated. So the whole thing, they should get the FBI out of Indian Reserve. We don't need them there. You know, it's got to be something else that would be a little better.
Harvey, we're going to take a break in a couple minutes. We're talking with Harvey Arden here. Harvey Arden is a writer, a former National Geographic editor, and has done a tremendous amount of research over the past decades on the Leonard Peltier case. Harvey, I love hearing your voice and the way you talk about Indian country.
I like that. You know, I'm a literary type. I'm not a political activist, especially.
All right, but tell us before
got
the break,
involved,
Harvey.
But listen to this guy's, his voice, you know, and I turned it into a play, so I even do like spoken word with it. We actually won a spoken word CD from the Native American Music Association a couple of years ago for me reading some of his words. But, and it's not like a reading, it's a word performance, you know. We each begin in innocence. We all become guilty. In this life, you find yourself guilty of being who you are. Being yourself, that's called aboriginal sin. That's the worst sin of all.
I like that, aboriginal sin. With Harvey Arden. Harvey, tell us, given the situation now with Leonard Peltier, tell us as best you can in about 2 minutes what people can do to help free Leonard Peltier, and then we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about Wisdom Keepers. I'm going to let you go on with that beautiful voice of yours, but tell us in a couple of minutes here, what can people do to help Leonard
Peltier
get free?
They need to go to whoisleonardpeltier.info. And
I'll put that on the web.
Leonardpeltier.info, and that's Leonard's current, used to be called the LPDC, now it's the LPDOC, Defense Offense Committee. It's, you know, there's people more knowledgeable in Europe than they are here about Leonard.
Who is LeonardPeltier.com? Okay, I'm going to put that in the archive.
Dot info.
Who is LeonardPeltier.info? I'm going to put that in the archive.
They have all of that, and at 78 now, I'm too old to march around. I've marched in many things. It seems you have to go beyond what has been done. This whole thing of writing petitions online, to me it's just a way of getting you to, you know, misuse your anger. You know.
Well, what's the key?
Nobody
what's
reads
the key?
These.
Harvey Arden, what is the key to getting Leonard Peltier free?
Maybe 5 million people. Surrounding Washington, not, you know, he doesn't want people to die in his behalf. His life is largely over. Man, been sitting there for 38 years. That's a lot of your life. Wow.
Yeah,
and
sure
yet, coming out of it is a very inspirational character to many millions of people. And if you ever met him, he's a fine guy. Would never, ever, ever have done what they accuse him of. He's the one who's paid for it, he and his family. They're always worried about their two FBI agents that someone killed, not Leonard. But Leonard's whole family, imagine what that would do to you if your breadwinner, your husband, your son, your close relative, and Indians are very close when everything is just falling around you. All their lives they still live their lives, but just such hurt is done. We've been doing such crap, and I say we, I mean white people. I'm white. We haven't. You know, we don't look at ourselves at all realistically. Working with Indians for 3 or 4 decades now, I get to see sort of an underclass view of America. Otherwise, I was a middle-class Jew in Chicago. What do I know about Indians?
Well Harvey, we're going to find out. Harvey Arden, we're going to find out what you know about Indians. And I want you to do some readings. We're going to talk about your amazing book, Wisdom Keepers. I want you to tell us a bit about a few of these Wisdom Keepers and their Native American spirituality and knowledge. And we're talking with Harvey Arden. Whoismenopilteer.info is where you want to go to find out how to free Leonard Peltier, do the best we can on that very difficult and challenging job. And we're gonna fade in with some music now. And Harvey, you're gonna stay with us. We'll be out about 3 minutes.
It's totally worth it.
Come back and talk about Wisdom Keepers.
Home sweet home to me.
Solartopia, that's the Rocky Top version of the Solartopia song by my good friend and wonderful companion, Dana Lyons, of Cows with Guns fame. Go to cowswithguns.com to see one of the great music videos. It's got 2 million views on the rebellion of the cows against meat eating. We are having an extraordinary show here with Harvey Arden, my fellow Harvey, about the first half has been devoted to Leonard Peltier. Go to whoismenopilteer.info to find out how to help get this man free after God knows how long he's been in prison. Harvey Arden is an expert on his case, and we've talked about that. On the second part of our show, Harvey has a beautiful – I have a great face for radio. Harvey has a beautiful voice, and he's written or put together an extraordinary book with Steve Wall called Wisdom Keepers, Meetings with Native American Spiritual Elders. And I got to say, it's been a long time since I've been so captured by a book. This is a really beautiful production. It's from Atria Books and Beyond Words. And it's a perfect setup for a radio interview with a guy with a great voice like Harvey Arden, 78 years old. Harvey's still at it. Let me read some of the names of these wisdom keepers. Frank Fool's Crow, Audrey Shenandoah, Corbett Sundown, Harriet Starleaf Gums, Eddie Benton Benai, Orrin Lyons. I want to talk about Orrin Lyons, if you don't mind. Buffalo Jim, Thomas Banyaka. Banyaka, he's a Hopi. Uncle Frank Davis, Leon Shenandoah, Lewis Farmer. Harvey Arden, you compiled these interviews, you and Steve Wall, with some beautiful photographs. Really a gorgeous book, but the words in here and the personalities that you've captured of these great Native American wisdom keepers. And I want to say one thing here before I turn this over to you, because I'm going to let you talk. I teach U.S. history at two schools in Columbus, Ohio. Every textbook that I have ever come across, even the so-called liberal textbooks, spend zero time discussing the wisdom and the incredible history of Native America. The more liberal books now, they say, well, it was their land, and it's too bad we wiped them out. But they don't say anything. They don't talk about the incredible legacy of Native American culture and wisdom.
You always hate your victims, right? Nazis hated the Jews. They didn't just want to kill them. They wanted to kill them painfully.
Yes.
We did the same to the Indians. We were very, 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 when I say we, I mean us whites, were unbelievably cruel. We came over to a land that was fully populated. You know, they talk about in the history books 3 or 4 million Indians being here. There were 50 million Indians in Mexico. There were hundreds of millions of Indians up and down these two continents. And our history books are not to be trusted at all.
And of course, the numbers were greatly reduced even before more than a very small number of whites got here by the diseases that came from Europe. And, of course, Europe had been a rural society, and when they started to urbanize, you know, smallpox, cholera, diphtheria, rheumatic fever, measles, mumps, all these incredible diseases that came with urbanization, spread through Europe and wiped out, in many cases, 90% of the Europeans. And then they, over the course of a couple centuries, the Europeans did developed immunities. But when the first Europeans came to America, the Native Americans were not urbanized.
Well, we sprayed smallpox germs from dead bodies onto blankets and gave them the blankets.
Yes, and that was done, by the way, by Lord Jeffrey Amherst. I want to mention that. I'm glad you mentioned that. One of my pet peeves and one of the campaigns, before I die, I really want the name of Amherst, Massachusetts, and all other Amhersts in North America. There are 36 towns and counties in North America named after Jeffrey Amherst, who was the supreme commander of the British forces during the French-Indian War in the 1760s. And his great contribution to the human history was that he knowingly distributed blankets, as you mentioned, from a hospital where there was smallpox. He did this at Fort Pitt. And the in the 1750s or 60s. And, of course, smallpox immediately spread throughout the Native Americans of the Ohio Valley, and actually came back and spread among the whites in the Ohio Valley as well. So Lord Jeffrey Amherst is the inventor of modern germ warfare, and yet we have 36 towns and counties, including Amherst, Massachusetts, where I lived for many years nearby, named after him. I want his name removed, at least from Amherst, Massachusetts. We actually ran a contest in Amherst to come up with an alternative name, and people came up with a beautiful name, Emily. Emily Dickinson lived in Amherst, Massachusetts, and I would love to see, if anybody's listening here from Western Mass, I would love to see the name of Amherst removed from that town and have the name changed to Emily. After that little soliloquy, Harvey Arden, I would love, and by the way, I do believe, you know, it's a horrible tragedy the way Native Americans have been treated in this country. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, of course, Leonard Peltier is such a symbol of that, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you. But an even greater tragedy in many ways is the fact that white people, this European-based society, has not learned anything from the Native Americans. You know, only in recent years has there been an environmental movement. Has there been, among the baby boomers, you know, a culture that honors and accepts and tries to learn from what Native America has to teach? And so this book of yours, Wisdom Keepers, is just shockingly beautiful and brilliant in how it deals with the actual wisdom that has come to us from Native American leaders. And I'd like to, I know you're going to talk on, and I'd love to hear your voice. I'd like you to start with Orin Lyons. Orin Lyons, he's in a film that I show my classes. He's an incredibly generous-looking, powerful man. My understanding is that he, as an Iroquois, as an Onondaga, played lacrosse, which was invented by the Iroquois, at Syracuse University with Jim Brown, who was the greatest of all NFL running backs, and that both Orin and Jim Brown are in the Lacrosse Hall of Fame. But tell me, you obviously met, I read about your meeting and interviewed Orin Lyons. Start with Orin Lyons. Tell us about Orin Lyons and then go ahead and segue into the other wisdom keepers in your book, if you would, Harvey Arden.
Well, that's a good one to start with because he was one of the first people I went to. And he had received a list of people from various Indian scholars and who might originally we were going out looking for medicine women, but we soon found that there was a category in Indian society known as an elder, and I would put a capital E on the elders. Elders of any sort are treated with great respect. You're pretty darn lucky if you become an elder on a reservation with the average death age of 46. So they're treated very nicely. In fact, they are put at the center of the political councils. Their input, their veto can determine what a people does. And they're honored in a way, they're not put away in old folks' homes. But they sit at the center of each household and are beloved for that and revered. And and I had no real personal interest in the medicinal side of medicine, man. It was all confusing to me, and I didn't find it satisfied my curiosity. I wanted to find about their wisdom. I wanted to find what they knew, what the basis of their thinking was. And if they asked me, well, what do you want to talk about, Harvey? I would blurt out wisdom. Anyway, I met Orrin at night. I remember we drove up and met him at a predetermined little shop on the Onondaga Reservation. First thing he said to me is, I remember the words, the night is our friend. I don't know why those words stuck with me. The night is our friend. He spoke poetry from beginning to end, as did a number of the people around there. Leon Shenandoah, the elder, Orrin was sort of his like assistant at that time. Orrin was a faith keeper, which is it's a word they use. You might call him a sub-chief, but it's on a spiritual level. And he laid out the difference between the natural law, and we were sitting at a table in a log house, and this man, brilliant man, was laying out all of the, not all the nasty stuff, but some of the specifics, where they came from, who they were, what had happened to them. Did we know that Washington was known among them as the house burner? Because he sent up the general and they burned all their nice houses, their longhouses, and they tore down the fruit trees. And the Iroquois had great fruit trees, horticulture. They ripped those out and killed them and chased them and stole their land and gave that land to the soldiers. Here and there are some reservations left, and people don't maybe think of reservations in New York State. There are actually 17 reservations in New York State, and mostly Iroquois, though there are also Mohegan and a couple of other tribes.
So what do Orrin have to say?
He spoke about natural law that supersedes and totally blots out American law, man's law and natural law. A sense of nature as a living presence, not just as a thought in a classroom environment or something, but he had a direct relationship to the very ground, to the soil where he lived. And he was infused with a love for his people. He was originally a Seneca who became a faith keeper. They borrow exceptional people from tribe to tribe. There are six different Iroquois nations. And to this day, travels around and speaks at the UN and other places. He's suffered attacks from his own people, the younger people. There was an incident where he was involved in calling in the police to stop an incident on the reservation, and that's held against him, and they send people into audiences where he's speaking to heckle him. And his face is, you can see it in his face, tremendous tension of being there. He's now the spokesman for the whole Iroquois Confederacy. I did a story on the Iroquois Confederacy for Geographic. So I got into the whole Iroquois story, which is immensely complex. And went down to south of Central America with them, where they were in the role of what used to be known as the forest diplomats. They were known as the forest diplomats, and they went down to work on the crisis in Nicaragua, between the Mosquito Indians and the ruling Spanish group there. And remember, Russell Means was down there for that. And wrote about that in Geographic in whatever year that was, September 87, I think.
Well, Harvey Arden, you wrote for National Geographic and did a project for them on these Wisdom Keepers. You mentioned Oran Lions and the Iroquois Confederacy. Now, in my studies, I've come to believe that the Iroquois Confederacy was actually the inspiration and the model for the American federal government. If you look at Benjamin Franklin, who I believe is the most important of all the founding fathers, Franklin had great respect for the Iroquois Confederacy. He actually said, only Benjamin Franklin could have got away with saying this, that the Iroquois Confederacy runs better than the British Parliament. And he used the structure of the Iroquois Confederacy of six nations coming together in a Congress on an annual basis, at least, to organize their government. And he used that as a basis for the institution of the American representation of government with states within a federal confederacy. Tell us about the state of the Iroquois Confederacy now and Oran Lyons' role in it.
Well, I can't speak of Oran in the last few years. Last saw him at Hofstra University maybe 5 years ago. The Iroquois Confederacy is not the Iroquois. The Iroquois, with all their different reservations, each has its own tribal council and its elected officials. Those are not the Iroquois Confederacy. Those are Iroquois peoples, Seneca, Onondaga. There are six of them, Tuscarora, Cayuga, and
the Oneida.
The Oneida. They still function today. They have their longhouses, and the longhouses are sort of like what you call a rustic church, where they have their meetings, and next to the longhouse is usually what they call a mud house, where the ladies work and make the corn soup and all the food for all the people attending the political meetings. So they're highly politicized, and they do have this same problem we, America, do, is that we've got 50 states. They had six, but even that had divisions, and they have to bring their people together, and a lot of the way they modeled themselves is said, particularly by Franklin, to have influenced the U.S. Government, the U.S. Constitution, and I do believe it. But they didn't brag about it in the old days. You know, they would have been, Indians were supposed to be stupid. They never were stupid. They were always very wise in their own ways and very much more practical in relationship to living with the earth, this wonderful earth that we're put on. So I got involved, you know, my friend photographer Steve Wall called me one day from Atlanta or somewhere down there and said, Harvey, I've met an Indian. And I said, oh, boy, you know, terrific. You've met an Indian. Tell me more. And he went on to describe he'd met this man, Two Trees, and a Cherokee herbalist who had been invited by two famous chiefs, Amanita Wolf Sequoyah and Josie, down in the Seminole swamps. They both invited him to be a student, to learn, and he said, well, listen, I'm just a mid-level herbalist. I'm not into this higher stuff. And lo and behold, about the very early 80s, they both died almost at the same time, and he was swept with remorse, this Two Trees, that he had not gone with these two great elders, and decided he would, as a form of recompense, go himself on a journey to the seven different Indian nations, is what he called them, based on a Cherokee legend of there being seven basic Indian peoples. And he was telling this to Steve Wall, and so he said, you know, that would be a good National Geographic story, right? A medicine man goes around to other medicine men and talks, and trouble was Two Trees very shortly disappeared because he found that he had a rivalry with all of the other medicine men. He started telling them about things instead of listening, and at one point he took off. He says, you guys do it, I can't do it. He was to be the author, I was to be the editor. Steve takes the photographs. So I asked our editor at that time, Bill Garrett, let me go write the story about visiting these elders, these medicine men. And he bought it, because I didn't have any baggage, you know. I'm just, a dumb... Oh, what was that? And maybe we're getting late here. Anyway, it's gone on, and I have finally wrote the book Wisdom Keepers with 17 different elders, and I'm producing a series of books ever since then, which can be gotten at wisdomkeepersproject.com.
So each one of these Wisdom Keeper books talks about another Wisdom Keeper, is that it?
Mostly of the following books. There's a little small book called Noble Red Man that followed Wisdom Keepers, and it's just about Matthew King, an Oglala chief.
And
wonderful words. He spoke.
Harvey Arden, we've got just a few more minutes. Tell us, if you can, the most profound and important lessons that you've learned from these Wisdom Keepers, and how should we be approaching the Native American elders and their
well,
and what they know?
What do you ask? What is the meaning of life? And I remember Matthew King telling me, let me see, what where's my 78-year-old mind screwing up? Life is not an entertainment. Life is a holy task. And I think there's a whole philosophy in those very few words. If you look at your life, and is it just an entertainment, watching TV, going out, going to the football game or whatever, or is it a holy task? Is there something we really need to do in this world? And Indians feel that way, and they usually think of it in regard to just the survival of their very people. But the idea that life is a holy task, we aren't holy. There ain't no holy people, I don't really believe, maybe a few. But what we do can, in effect, be holy in the sense that it can be what Creator wants to be done, presuming there is a Creator. And Indians are very much believe in a Creator. And so I've been profoundly moved by them. I'm Jewish. I lived through one Holocaust. I didn't even know about it at the time. I was 5 years old, but World War II. But Indians have had an ongoing Holocaust for 500 plus years now, and we're still trying to kill them. We're still trying to kill them, you know. Separate the elders, put them in old age homes, and then mistreat them. And the state of Indian country is, like Leonard's world, all shadows, all factions. Whites should just feel shame.
Now we know
what we've done to Indians, what we've done to Leonard Peltier, and what we're doing to the rest of the world now, as far as Harvey Arden says
right
now.
Harvey Arden, thank you so much for this, for your wisdom and your gracious research into Warren Lyons and the other Wisdom Keepers.
Well, I'm glad to talk to such a knowledgeable fellow.
Who is Leonard Peltier? Info is where to go to find out about Leonard Peltier. Harvey Arden, your Wisdom Keepers book is brilliant. Thank you so much. This has been another Philotopia Green Power and Wellness Show. and we will be back with you next week with Gordon Edwards from Canada to talk about nuclear issues. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Okay, Harvey.
And you take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.